Lights. Camera. Action. Now, where's the mullet? Where is he? Is he coming in by chopper again?
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond with the Lethal Mullet Podcast. Oh, g'day, mate. There you go.
The show, folks. This is Lethal Mullet Podcast on Phantom Podcast Network. Your host here, Adam O'Brien, from, of course, this amazing show and many others on the channel, which we'll talk about a little bit later. Hope you enjoyed the last show, episode number 243, looking at McBain. That's right, we were ready to have our minds blown as Christopher Walken was back in action as McBain, delivering epic one-liners and incredible fight scenes. Hashtag McBain returns. Yes. Yeah, it was a funny little episode, looking obviously at something that was quite out there. Tonight, though, we're going to look at something that was a very successful film for 1995, I believe, if I remember it correctly. Or was it 94? It would have been 94, that's right. Directed by Jan de Bont as his first film. And, of course, written by Graham Yost, or Yost. And it's, of course, Keanu Reeves, Dennis Hopper, and Sandra Bullock in Speed. Yes, we're going to be looking at that. Get ready for Rush Hour. What a movie. I mean, again, it shows the versatility of, whoa, Keanu Reeves, man. I'm going to do something like play a police officer, man. And, of course, he plays a hell of a rookie in this film. And we're big fans of Keanu because he gives free beer and nachos to those watching the local rugby league films on TV. That's right, that we're on there. That's right, on the big screen. And then down comes old mate from Dogstar with no eyebrows and no hair, mind you, back in 1997. And he goes, hey, mate, can you watch me band, please? Gives us a beers, gives us some nachos, and we did indeed watch Dogstar, because then we just watched the Broncos versus Canberra on the reruns at home. Because at the end of the day, hey, mate, it's free beer and nachos. What do you do? Welcome to, of course, Lethal Mullet on, of course, Phantom Podcast Network, which can be found on fpnet.podbean.com. That's right, that's fpnet.podbean.com, folks. And I hope you're out there enjoying an interesting evening for yourselves. And I hope this is interesting for you to listen to. Flashback down to, of course, the old days of the 90s, when, to be honest, I think there was a lot better films out there that were, you know, they're out there for you to devour and you to enjoy. But I think at the same time, these were films which, you know, they gave us a sense of fun for 90 minutes too. You know, an hour and a half was the usual, but sometimes 2 hours, to say that. But a lot of these films are just enjoyable for what they were very quickly. And, you know, there's a lot of films that are forgotten from the 90s in particular. I think the 80s are probably remembered a lot better for action films in particular, but the 90s still had some strong stuff. And, of course, that was, you know, the rounds of Steven Seagal, Jean-Claude Van Damme, or my personal favourites, folks, which is, of course, the early times with Shokasugi, Dudikoff, of course, back in the canon days. But on top of that, I've also enjoyed, you know, the likes of Jean-Claude Van Damme, his early run, Jeff Speakman, and, of course, Jeff Wincott, who is out there and follows Lethal Mullet today. So a big shout-out to, of course, Jeff Wincott and, of course, his wife, Charlotte, and family, who now do their own independent films and do an amazing job doing them. I think, you know, hats off to a family that really does an amazing amount of creativity in the film market, in the international film market too. There's been many awards for their work as well. So a big shout out to Jeff and the family, and I hope you're all doing well. And thank you also for the amazing amount of action films that obviously you've influenced people to get into martial arts through. I really think that it's always been the way for the 90s. A lot of those films made us want to get into the dojos and the gymnasiums and just literally kick ass, get into shape, and of course learn some stuff on the way, learn how to handle ourselves and also how to avoid fights. That's the big one too. So fbnet.podbean.com for Phantom Podcast Network. You'll find Lethal Mullet on there. You'll also find Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast, which is, of course, hosted by our co-founder, Kevin Reitzel, and Lee Fillings, this great show. And I've got quite a few new mates through, obviously, being involved in that fandom too. Highlander is an amazing platform. And obviously, we've got a new one with Henry Cavill on the way, which won't be too long away. Looking forward to that. And, yes, we had a few laughs with that one being, of course, April 1st the other day. We jokingly cast Jack Black as the new Kurgan. Or was it a Ramirez? I can't remember. Either way, I think he'd do a stand-up job both. But I'd get him on the soundtrack because Tenacious D is just the bee's knees. So there's that. There's also Culture Clash, which looks at the weekly pop culture. That's with, of course, Kevin Reitzel and our other co-founder, Kyle Wagner, both from either side of the United States, East and West. Great guys. And, of course, Kevin will be here in a couple of weeks to chat to me. And, of course, you guys out there too are going to be doing some podcasts live from a friend of the channel. That's, of course, Blair Hescock's Home Cinema, where we'll be looking at some films over there too and showing the surrounds of the Brisbane City and, of course, a Gold Coast return for Kevin the Radio Nerd Reitzel. Lots of fun, and no doubt we'll find some films to talk about. And we're going to see some films too. One new one, which is all about stunts and stunt play. We'll get into that too. You can catch this podcast on most of the socials, on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at The Lethal Mullet. Also now on, was it Snapchat? We're also on TikTok, and not doing as much stuff on those ones, but because you can't really post podcasts, I guess, on them. But yeah, there's definitely stuff about movies and different stuff we're following on there too. So go and check those out. So let's have a look at 1994. It was an interesting year. We had The Crow in there. We had, obviously, it was a year where we had a lot of Wesley Snipes stuff at the time too. It was very popular at that time. Keanu Reeves, no doubt, huge. Obviously, Jeff Daniels in this as well, very, very popular. And, you know, I remember Speed being an interesting, you know, experience. Obviously, Sandra Bullock as well. She'd just done, was it Demolition Man before that? And so, you know, it was a cast that was, I personally think, quite a bit, you know, in the way of, you know, especially getting people into this sort of fast-paced sort of movie. It was a good cast. Like, it was really well done. Joe Morton is in it as well. We've also got Alan Rux in this as well. So some really, really interesting people behind some of the characters in this, which we're going to be talking about today, obviously. But I think a lot of people forget that Speed was, you know, a lot of different ideas at the time, but Speed was a, you know, kind of a novel idea at the time. It was, you know, an idea that obviously it could be Die Hard, kind of, you know, you're still holding hostages to a certain degree. But in this one, it's on a bus. You know, the 90s were all about that. You know, we had Under Siege, which was Die Hard on a ship, and then we had Passenger 57, which was kind of Die Hard on a plane, kind of. And it was different ideas on that concept. You know, there was even one where it was, you know, a big Die Hard, the city, which they kind of did with Die Hard 3 as well. But, you know, there's many others. There's some, this is a great John Cena one that's kind of like Die Hard, well, more like Die Hard 3 as well. So there's a number of different ones. Yeah, I've got a lot of time, I've got to say, but for John Cena. Very talented guy, you know, it's amazing. You know, big guy with a, you know, decent build, gets out there, gets in amongst the wrestling, but smart. He was choosing different things, just did a movie with Jackie Chan. Obviously, The Marine was probably one of the first that shot that here in Australia on the Gold Coast where I live. You know, so that was a great sort of introduction to seeing him on film. And also, you know, I think he's got a real personality, you know, particularly the character that he gives off in, you know, just as himself in interviews, one of respect. And there's been times where you see John Cena in public, he's just going about his day, where that random social, butter light that goes around, or the social networking person that wants to put news on their feed or just be material, will just have their cameras on. This, you know, poor fellow that just wants to do his shopping straight up. And yet he calls it out straight away that these people are doing that as well, which I think is hilarious. You know, and again, good on him for standing his ground and telling these, you know, these guys that literally the paparazzi, they're just sitting around these, you know, people are doing an interesting job, but one, again, that doesn't need to be disrespected in that way too. So good on him for doing that. And he's just a funny guy. Obviously, he's done that DC work with Peacemaker. But not that familiar with, but I know that it did quite a few good bits of business out there too. So, you know, again, there's some different ideas for Die Hard movies, and this is sort of one of them to a certain degree. I Like Speed. It definitely was something that could have been a full franchise, and, of course, it got a sequel, which was very laughable sequel. You know, it's definitely not one that you'd go and set out your way to get and see. But there was an interesting cast in that one too. So we'll talk about that at a later date. Now, Speed, 1994, comes out, and obviously got a great cast. And it's a very simple premise is the story rolls around a bus that's rigged by an extortionist, and it's to explode if it goes below 50 miles per hour. Pretty simple idea. Now, the original idea for this one was actually going to be a Jeff Speakman film. That's right. Jeff Speakman, who is, of course, the head of Kenpo Karate or Kenpo 5.0, and basically one of Ed Parker's proteges in the American Kenpo system. It was actually built for him. And this is well before it became what it was. And obviously it changed a few times and became something different. But it's interesting that originally that's what it was. And so this is actually acclaimed as one of the best action films of particularly the mid-90s, without a doubt. It's often thought of that way. It was a big A-grade film, boosted Keanu Reeves to a huge level at the time. And then there was a Speed sequel, as we were talking about, Speed 2 Cruise Control, which it was absolute dud. And sadly had a great cast as well. So you had Sandra Bullock in as well. And it had gone down as one of the absolute worst sequels ever. So on a budget of about $30 million, this film has done $350 million in sales and box office. Directed by Jan de Bont and Waste of a Story by Graham Yost. Produced by Mark Gordon. The cast we've talked about, and here's where the names come in. You'll know some of these. The production company is Mark Gordon's company, of course. Music by Mark Mancina, edited by John Wright, and Andres Butkowiak is a cinematographer. We'll go on to direct, obviously, later on. It was released in June of 1994, and I still remember that being a really interesting year. You know, everyone was really hyped on this movie when it first came out, and it was definitely something that was interesting. We'll go to the story in a sec. Just go through quickly some of the cast and we'll see how that goes. Obviously, there's Jack Traven. We've got Keanu Reeves pretty much starting to get his kick into superstardom. Dennis Hopper is Howard Payne, obviously the extortionist and somebody that likes setting up buses. Annie Porter, played by, of course, Sandra Bullock. She's on fire in this one. She really steals the show, as does Keanu. We've got Jeff Daniels as Detective Harry Temple. This, who's a partner to, of course, Jack. We've also got Joe Morton from obviously Terminator series as Lieutenant Herb McMahon, who is advising the guys as well. He's the LT of the group. Alan Ruck from, of course, many things, one being captain of the Starship Enterprise at one stage. And he plays Doug Stevens on the bus. We've got Glenn Plummer as Maurice, Beth Grant as Helen, Hawthorne James as Sam Silver, Carlos Carreras as Ortiz, David Kriegel as Terry, Natsuko Ohama as Mrs. Camino. Yeah, there's a few others here and there, folks, but I've got to say, for the most part, this is a very solid cast. Now, the film was one that Graham, when it goes down to the story, that is, was from the screenwriter Graham Yost had told his father, who was a television host, about a film called Runaway Train, which was starring John Voight, and basically it's about a train that speeds out of control. Now, that film was based on a 1963 concept by Akira Kurosawa, and he mistakenly believed that the train situation was due to a bomb on board, which was similar to a film called The Bullet Train, which, of course, was a Sonny Chiba film, which we've actually covered here on this channel before, folks. So after they'd seen the film, Graham decided it'd be a better idea and being a bomb on board the bus while it was going and travel at 20 miles per hour to prevent an actual explosion. And so somebody, there was a friend of theirs, said you should go up to 50 miles per hour, mate. The film was also inspired by the end of the 76 film Silver Streak. So, again, they initially named the film Minimum Speed, and then, of course, it dropped back to speed later on. Screwed to completely occur on the bus originally, and was originally going to be directed by John McTiernan. But, of course, he'd been interested in bigger movies like Predator, Die Hard, Hunt for Red October, etc. He declined, and eventually it went to Yundabon down the line. Michael Bay wanted to also direct the movie at the time as well, And, of course, Yost then took the project to 20th Century Fox, which had made Die Hard. And that's basically where things took to the high wire. Now, the shooting script, there's different things that are done with it because they basically thought it was a terrible script. So Yundabon brought in Joss Whedon a week before the principal photography started and got to work on the script. And Whedon pretty much rewrote the entire set of dialogue on it, which are very much in sync. And from there, they wrote the dialogue together as they would. And, of course, Whedon's contribution is reworking Trevin's character once Keanu Reeves had cast. Basically got into the idea of how Whedon speaks and stuff like that too. From here, basically Whedon, credit for the pop quiz hotshot lines and stuff like that to him. So you can kind of tell that that would be sort of heading that towards area too. Also, Doug Stevens, played by Alan Ruck, was a lawyer. And there was different things that originally he was a bad guy, so they changed it to a tourist, just a nice, out of his depth sort of person. And again, little things here and there, and they also changed things when Dennis Hopper was cast as original. So casting, originally Jeff Speakman was originally attached in Speed with the project under Paramount's ideal. Stephen Baldwin was the first choice for Jack Trevin. He declined the offer because he felt the character was too much like John McClane. And there was also Tom Cruise, Tom Hanks, Wesley Snipes, and Woody Harrelson. Yundabon ultimately chose Keanu Reeves and after seeing him in Point Break. So basically you'd have that before it was anyone else too. Reeves spent 2 months at Gold's Gym in LA to get into shape for the role as well too. The role of Annie, they tried another number of different people. So one stage they were going to go with Halle Berry, but also Meryl Streep and Kim Basinger and Anne Hesh were also offered time for the role. So what is it about this film? What's the story? What's the main crux about where things are going? So the film begins with basically a SWAT bomb disposal unit going in, and this is Jack Trevin and Harry Temple trying to outwit basically an elevator that's got a bomb on it. From taking out the hostage they got. And it's for a $3 million ransom by Howard Payne, who's an extortionist and, of course, obviously a bomber too. Really interesting. So this is the cover of the con. He takes Harry hostage. Jack shoots Harry in the leg, forcing basically the bomber to let go and release him. Payne flees and detonates the bomb, apparently killing himself. This is when a few days later, Jack and Harry are praising Mac, and, of course, Harry is promoted to detective, and both partners receive the next rank up medal and, of course, celebration, having survived the incident. Payne watches from afar the next morning, and this is when the bus explodes from another bomb planted by Payne. Once that happens, he contacts Jack Trevin, explains there's a third bomb and it's rigged on a different bus, which will alarm it reaches 50 miles per hour and detonate if it drops below 50. Isn't that crazy? But this is the start. So here is the start, of course, of the action of this movie. Now, for Australian audiences, 50 miles an hour is 80 k's an hour. So you're talking fairly fast, you know, and it'd have to be on a freeway. Can't be on, local roads. Just wouldn't be enough room for that sort of stuff. So Hopper's character also demands an updated ransom of $3.7 million, and he wants to remotely detonate it if any of the passengers are offloaded from the bus. This is where Jack races through traffic at breakneck speed to get onto the bus, which is one of the most interesting scenes of the movie. Jack is then, of course, forced to reveal to all the passengers once he's on board that there is a bomb. Jack goes through and, of course, finds the bomb underneath the bus. And this is where he's on the phone constantly to Jeff Daniels, trying to figure out how to put out the bomb. Payne then calls Jack, and while being convinced to allow Sam to be offloaded, one of the driver, he detonates a smaller bomb after witnessing a passenger attempt to get off, killing her. When Jack learns part of the freeway is incomplete, he persuades Annie this time to then speed through and jump the gap. Again, a great scene, the way it's filmed and edited too, which is just fantastic. So from here, this is where things get interesting. Obviously, eventually they have to get it somewhere. So they've gone through. They finally get to the Los Angeles International Airport, which has got no obstructions. The runways are clear, and he uses that. And, of course, they obviously spoof things by getting a hold of the camera that's inside the CCTV inside the bus and putting a fake loop on the camera. From here, they find out that Payne was actually a bomb squad officer. This is how he knows bombs real well. And they lead a SWAT team to Payne's house, but the property goes up, killing, obviously, Harry and the rest of the team that go out there. From here, after the passengers grabbing back aboard, Jack learns that Payne has been watching everything on that surveillance camera. So this is where they trick it up. And from there, they fix that so they can get out and get the people offloaded. So we're using some extra buses and stuff like that, these people movers, they're able to get the people off safely. And then, of course, using one of the hatches down below the actual bus itself, they slide off. And it's a great little scene with, obviously, Sandra Bullock and Keanu Reeves as they get along on that little press release that they've got. From here, Payne also hijacks a subway train, handcuffs Annie when he sees her to a pole and sets the train in motion, while Jack Tram is obviously after them. So after snapping and shooting at the controls, this is where we get to see that he kills the train driver. Payne attempts to bribe with the money, but is enraged with a dye pack that explodes in his face. And of course, from here, Payne battles Jack on the train. And this is where we get some great scenes. Again, it's all on the train, and it's not a huge kung fu fight or anything like that. It's actually straight up fisticuffs. So Jack deactivates Annie's vest, but Payne has the key and he cannot free her from the pole. Unable to obviously slay down the train, Payne shut the control panel. Jack, from here, accelerates to jump the tracks. The train then plows through the construction site and into Hollywood Boulevard. And, of course, they live happily ever after. So it's a great little film. And I think that's what makes that interesting too. So filming started in 1993, late 93, and finished in December. And DeBont used basically an 80-foot model of a 50-story elevator shaft for the opening scene. So, again, a lot of practicals here, guys. You know, so it's pretty cool. While Speed was a production actor and friend River Phoenix had died. And immediately after Phoenix died, DeBont changed the shooting schedule so that Keanu could get down and actually obviously spend some time grieving and stuff like that. And as he said in, when this happened, Yandabot said, got to him emotionally. He became very quiet. It took him quite a while to work it out by himself and calm down. Scared the hell out of him, he recalls. So Reeves, of course, you know, is pretty new at this stage to action films. And, you know, he'd only really done Point Break at that stage. So this was a little bit more involved and definitely was something that was talked about in the press with it too. There are 11 GM New Look buses that were used in the film, three Grumman 870 buses as well. Two of them were blown up. One was actually used for the high-speed scenes and others were used for interiors. Many of the freeway scenes were filmed on California's Interstate 105 and Interstate 110. And at the Stack Interchange, known today as Judge Harry Pregerson Interchange. And this is not officially open at the time of the filming. It was a new area at the time. It's interesting. Now, filming the final scenes occurred at Mojave Airport, which doubled for Los Angeles International Airport. Shots of the Metro Red Line went through the construction zone using 1/8 scale model. And they also had an MD-521 helicopter used throughout through the film and was sold to afterwards the Calgary Police Service. So box office. This is a film in June 10, 1994. It came out straight to number one, grossing $14.5 million in its opening weekend. This is an absolutely killer of a movie when it came out. Lion King came out the third weekend. Speed continued to smash through targets in Australia and Canada and, of course, outlying suburbs as well. It remained Sandra Bullock's highest grossing film until 2013 when Gravity actually surpassed it too. Obviously, too, it's got about an 8.10 out of 10 on Rotten Tomatoes. And, of course, Metacritic seeing a 78 out of 100 as well. So it's got high praise. It's definitely something that was, you know, very different at the time too. It's coming out on many different systems. Obviously, VHS and Laserdisc came out in 94. Rental and, obviously, video sales just went through the roof and it helped domestic gross. From there, of course, it went out on the VHS version, which was widescreen, alongside True Lies, The Abyss, and Last of the Mohicans. And then Speed came out on DVD in 98, and it's been a big seller ever since. So where does this fit? Folks, this is definitely one of Keanu Reeves' best films, without a doubt. And that's what we're covering, two more episodes coming with, of course, Chain Reaction and 47 Ronin, in different periods of the life of on Keanu Reeves. This gets a 4 out of 5 on the amazing Lethal Mullet Halibut Scale.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. The Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.